Monday night on the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, the Fan, Ailish and Justin for the next hour. We've got two Stanley Cup playoff games on the network after us. The Lightning facing elimination versus Florida at 7 p.m. And Vegas and Dallas game four with a 2-1 series lead being held by the defending champs at 9:30 p.m.
We have a maiden voyage today. Ray Ferraro will join us in about 15 minutes. We'll get his take on the Leafs before looking west, his take on the Canucks, the Oilers, and that game four between Vegas and Dallas.
Frank Cervelli is going to join us from Vancouver. He's covering that Preds-Canucks series. We chatted with him last week. An incredible overtime win by the Canucks last night pushes that series 3-1 in favor of them. Doesn't matter if they have to use their fourth string goaltender. They're finding a way. We'll touch on that series and then the rest of the playoffs with Frank.
More Royals. The Blue Jays open another set with the Royals tonight. We'll get to that in Best Bets. And if we have time, we'll talk about the brothers Kelsey, both in the news.
They had a good day today.
They have a lot of good days.
Yeah. Good lives. Okay, so we're at a bit of a breaking point with some of these Stanley Cup playoff series. There are six teams now facing a 3-1 deficit. That's a quite the tall task at hand. You're down 3-1. We know the Maple Leafs are one of them. The Predators, the Lightning, the Islanders, the Kings, and the Jets all facing 3-1 deficits. Now, we've decided to do a little fact-finding and soul-searching here on the Fan Pregame. It's not often that teams can come back from a 3-1 deficit and win. What our category is which team or power ranking these teams do we feel more confident in at least forcing a game seven? All things are off the table once it's game seven, but just getting to a game seven, to winning the next two games, making this series a tied up situation, and then winner takes all type of game seven. So there are six teams. You can also text us in at 590-590 if you want to participate. Where do you find your highest level of confidence with these teams as they face elimination? And we got one of those games on tonight.
The teams are the Predators, Leafs, Lightning, Islanders, Kings, and Jets. Only 32 times in NHL history have teams come back from 3-1. So that's kind of the reason where it's just, can you force a game seven here? Because traditionally, coming all the way back and winning is a difficult task. Although the Florida Panthers did it to the Boston Bruins last year on their path to the Stanley Cup final. So I'll lead it off. Again, Predators, Leafs, Lightning, Islanders, Kings, Jets, all down 3-1. At this point, my number one team to at least force a game seven, it's got to be the Nashville Predators. The Canucks are down to a third string goaltender. And although that was good enough for a victory in game four, it's not ideal by any stretch of the imagination. Only one goal, though, separates these two teams right now in the series. Nashville has reduced Vancouver to under 18 shots per game, and they have UC Saros in net. Like, if you continue to do that over the course of the next two games, well, then I think there's a decent chance with a pretty big chasm between the goaltenders, despite Shelov's performance over the weekend. I think it's possible the Preds that can win two in a row, especially if they get the next one. They'll be favored on home ice in game six. I think the Predators are probably number one on that list.
Yeah, that game last night was really almost, there's that pivot point with the missed empty net that hits the post, and then all of a sudden the Canucks have life and they come back and they force overtime and they win.
And that is deflating. Like, not all 3-1 deficits are the same. I do think there'll be a bit of a mourning period for Nashville, but if they can get through that, then I think there's a decent chance.
And having that be the way that you gain the opportunity to put a team on the ropes as the Canucks are is a tough one. But yeah, the third string goaltending situation, and we'll talk to Frank about this a little later, is the Achilles heel for the Canucks if the Predators were to find a way. So that's actually second ranked for me. I feel pretty confident in a game seven between the Lightning and the Panthers.
Okay.
And it's crazy because this Panthers team looks unbelievable. But this has been a really close series. A 3-2 loss for the Lightning, a three-time overtime loss for the Lightning, then the 5-3 loss. Hey, they found their way. They're back into it, a 6-3 win. And to lose three in a row and to find a way to at least push it to another game, for me, is something that shows what the Lightning have, and that's championship pedigree. And I think it means a lot. I think that this team maybe overcame some lower expectations this year. We've talked about good coaching. Well, that's a series with both teams being really well coached. I don't want to see a Lightning team take their foot off the gas, and they have that opportunity. They win again tonight, and they're right there with Florida. Florida's got some beat up bodies as well. I do have Panthers going pretty far in my NHL bracket, but I've seen something from this Lightning team. They're not down and out. I would feel confident in the goaltending situation on that side as well to be able to make this into a series. So I feel at the top of my power ranking is the Lightning. finding a way to push a game seven against the Panthers, and I kind of want to see it too.
And a big Sergachev boost, of course, as well. The Lightning have done a lot of things over the course of their, I guess, dynastic run. I mean, they've been really good for the better part of 10 years and even beyond that. But something they haven't done since 2011 is come back from a 3-1 deficit. I guess that's because they're leading in many of these series that they're playing. But still, this would be rather unprecedented for them to come back. I guess I have confidence they're number two on my list in them just because they're the best of the six teams that are down 3-1. If you look at all the, like, they just have the most talent. And for that reason, I think I have some faith that they can. But the problem is they may be the best of the six. They may be playing the best of the six opponents that are up 3-1 at this point. So they're number two. I think they're a pretty large step back, though, after the Predators.
Okay, so we had our one and two flip-flopped. My third would be the Jets to come back against the Avs. And I, you know why? Because I don't want to give up hope on these Jets because they, I really want to see them have a lengthy playoff push. They are a pretty structurally strong team. They've just been giving up 5+ goals a game. It's a one simple fix if you're Connor Hellebuyck. But this game, this series has been crazy. Like, the scores are completely what we hadn't predicted. I think maybe I didn't give the Avalanche enough credit on how good they would be. Could I see the Jets pushing a game seven? For sure. I think it means so much that they get this next game at home. They rally around that crowd, the whiteout. Like, I think the energy is going to be exactly what they need to at least push it to a game six. Would that be great? Yeah, a game six. But I don't want to give up on the Jets. I really see something in them. I'm also rooting heavily for the Canadian teams. But I think their weakness is just goaltending. And can you find a way through that? Yeah. I hope so.
I'm not sure if I'm most wrong about the Avs or I'm most wrong about the Jets coming in to these playoffs. And I guess that kind of like answers the question to this, because if I was most wrong about Colorado, then Winnipeg probably doesn't have a chance. But if I was most wrong about Winnipeg,
it does look like we've underestimated them. The Avs.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, I did think, you know, they have an immense amount of top end talent, but I didn't think they were the same team as 2 years ago. And I guess they're not, they might be even better. I didn't think that would be part of my thinking process, though, at this point. They've definitely exceeded my expectations. And with the Jets, you're not really sure because, as you mentioned, Connor Hellebuyck has kind of been the reason why it hasn't worked. But that's the reason why you have to have some faith in them, because if Hellebuck's the reason why they're losing, well, he's normally the reason why they're winning. And if that fixes itself, then, yeah,
then you can win.
Winnipeg could win two more games and force a game seven.
Okay, I've got the Leafs.
Number four?
Fourth on my list.
I got them five. Why do you like the Leafs?
I think it's not even that I like the Leafs, it's that I just think that
the
Kings and the Islanders have less of a chance. It was hard to place this one. Obviously, I picked the Leafs in seven, so I'm well on my way to this one. But
you've got the required losses to get there.
Here's why I think the Leafs could do it. Looks like they're going to get Joseph Woll, and they're going to get a fresh slate in net at this point. Doesn't seem like Samsonov's going to get another chance. You ride the Woll wave until that takes you somewhere. Sometimes teams rally around that differently. They see, okay, we got a new face in net. We got a new, like, lease on life. Why I don't think they could do it, everybody's sick and injured. It's like this team is falling down more than you can even imagine. The core four is all in shambles. This seems like the vibes are super off. But they play their next game in Boston, and they were winning more on the road than they are at home. So maybe that gives them something.
Okay.
And I still think that there's got to be a fight in them, or they show up tomorrow night and it's just the doors are beaten off by Boston. I feel like it goes either one way. The Leafs come and they show this isn't it for us. This isn't the end of our core four. This isn't the end of this Maple Leafs team as we know it. Or it's a wave another white flag and they lose by five. I have no idea how to place this one.
Yeah, it's difficult, right? Because what makes sense often doesn't with the Maple Leafs. Like, I mean, maybe the strongest point in favor of them is that they never make sense, and making a comeback now would make zero sense. Like, honestly, like, that's just how the Maple Leafs are. But fragility, I think, has to be something that has to come into the equation here. I mean, yeah, they've had resolve at some points, not in big moments, but in some moments. Expecting the habit in Boston seems like an impossibility, though. The Matthews thing is crazy. Like, if Matthews just can't go for the better part of an entire week, again, that's a whole different discussion unto itself.
This has some asterisks. You know, maybe one of Matthews, Marner, Nylander plays in the game. that would help.
I can't see them winning without Matthews. I still think the Nylander thing affected game four. How is Mitch Marner not going to be in his head after he's getting memed into oblivion after what we saw on the broadcast Saturday night?
Yeah.
This isn't a good spot for the Maple Leafs. And yet, on paper, I think they're a better team than the Boston Bruins. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's some hope there, but just all the story, all the baggage, everything that goes into this game feels like an impossible hurdle to overcome.
So you have them lower than what I do? What would you have?
I mean, I kind of want them fourth too, but I'll put them fifth.
All right, that's fine.
For the sake of being different.
So Kings and Islanders are the only two remaining teams. And for me, the Islanders are the bottom of my confidence ranking for teams that have a chance to force games. I mean, Carolina and the Islanders are different. They're playing different games. But the Kings, I'll say, they've always had a little bit of feistiness to them. The Oilers, I'm just giving a lot of credit to the Oilers when I'm ranking this. They just look like they're ready to move on and get to the next the next level. They are working so cohesively. Even last night, just like a very tidy 1-0 win, which they kind of got outplayed, and they got good goaltending, right? So I don't know how you beat the Oilers at this point. So the Kings having a big hole to crawl out of, to me, seems pretty tough. And the Islanders, I really, unfortunately, I'm giving them really no credit.
I'll go the Islanders 5. They, unlike the Leafs and Bruins, like the Islanders are clearly the worst team. Mm-hmm. But this is a high variance series because it's, you know, tight checking. What they do well is minimize. What Carolina does is minimize. So a couple bounces could actually change the series more than maybe LA and Edmonton, where, oh, they fall behind by 2 goals. Well, we'll chase the game and we'll eventually get it to overtime, even if that was the game that they lost there in game 2. I just think when it's higher variance, maybe the Islanders have a better chance than the Kings. But with the Kings and Oilers, the Oilers have now beat the Kings in every way possible, right? They've won the game where they got where they got dominated a little bit with a Skinner performance. Mm-hmm. They've won games where they've just overwhelmed them. Like any way you want to play it, the Oilers have had an answer. Skinner had a bad game, maybe gave away a game. Then Skinner maybe stole a game. So Skinner kind of has erased his mistake. I just don't see light in the tunnel, at the end of the tunnel, for the Kings whatsoever. But splitting hairs definitely with the Islanders and Kings.
All right, so Lightning, for me, my highest level of confidence, kind of split with the Preds, Jets, Leafs, Kings, Islanders. This is exciting, though, because, you know, every time, every series or every NHL Stanley Cup playoffs, there's a team that does something spectacular. We saw that with the Florida Panthers last year. Mm-hmm. We saw the Boston Bruins get reverse swept. Who's to say that can't happen again? A lot of people could say that. But when you look at that Maple Leafs team, and we just have a couple seconds here until we'll grab Ray, there was a lot bad. We were in the building for game 4 on Saturday night, and a lot about it stunk, right? Mm-hmm. So what's power rank? What was the worst, I guess, look into Maple Leafs experience that you saw, not on in terms of play? Like, what was it? The words on the bench, the Matthews not coming out, Samsonov not coming out for the third, the crowd booing. Like, it all was really icky.
Well, definitely wasn't the crowd booing, because I feel like what we saw warranted that.
Definitely.
And it definitely wasn't the words on the bench. In fact, I feel like that's progress. Mm-hmm. Because too long, the core 4 in Toronto, core 5, whatever you want to call it, they were like insulated by the team, but also insulated by each other. And that was really the first time that we've seen any dissension in the ranks among the major players with the Maple Leafs. And it's not like, you want to be at each other's throats or you want to be making a habit of this. But when something needs to be called out, you have to be, as a team and as leaders and as star players, able to call each other out on those things, or you're just facilitating those things. You're enabling those behaviors. So the fact that we actually saw someone angry, that mainly being William Nylander, and, you know, we can read the lips and we don't have to. We kind of get the gist of what was going on there. I do feel like that's a good thing, because eventually they have to stop with the togetherness and the veil of
apathy,
protectiveness,
where it doesn't
right?
bug you that you're losing another game in another important spot and nobody's showing up.
Showing emotion is good.
No,
showing that
I
you care is
that.
A good thing. In fact, if I'm taking one thing and actually being like, okay, maybe there's something there. Maybe this is turning the corner. Maybe you have to lose the series in embarrassing fashion again in order to turn that corner, but at least a corner is being turned, because if you keep failing and protecting each other, you're getting nowhere. Mm-hmm. And maybe, again, this is clutching at straws, maybe something's different based on what we saw.
Yeah, I don't think the moments of frustration on the bench means that this is a lost cause. I do think that showing some passion, the passion that ignites us all, means a lot for the fans, but it's maybe the way in which one individual looked like they, you know, Mitch Marner with throwing the gloves and looking like that was getting the best of him. Like, you can totally be in an impassioned fight with somebody on the bench. Like, pick up your man, try harder. You're not giving enough to this team. But then you get back out there and you perform. It's when you let that linger and you take it personally and it then sets you off your game and it feels like an attack. Like, it's in the same in your professional life. If you need to hold someone accountable, if you don't pay up that bet when you lose this year to me in the golf challenge, I'm going to get in your face too. Just don't throw your gloves. But I just think that it means something to show that you care. I think a lot of people in this market really want to yell at John Tavares at times because he's very stoic. So everyone shows leadership in a different way, but it's like, are you going to respond to that? And, you know, then you don't have Matthews come out for the third, so we don't know how he would have responded to that. You did see Marner score a really nice goal. But what matters more is the performance tomorrow night, right? We all have this idea of maybe there's some friction, maybe there's some tension, maybe they just yell at each other and they do love each other, like they said afterwards. But how do you show up tomorrow night? Do you show up that you play with some pride that this matters? Or are you, as I said, waving the white flag? Are you done with this season? Are you done with the core four? Are you done with your head coach? Are you done with the way that the Shanna plan has been structured for you? I think a lot will be learned about the performance that Maple Leafs put on the ice tomorrow night, away from Toronto, away from the Toronto crowd, away from distractions. It is TD Garden at its loudest and most passionate, and they're going to make you hear it if you lose and you lose a 4-1 series. So I think we're going to learn a lot about what character means, what it means to be a Maple Leaf, which I think a lot of people are questioning. What does that really mean to you? We'll see that tomorrow night.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the response that you've needed in those moments oftentimes has gone in vain. I will say I'm slightly bothered, more so with Samsonov, I think, although that is definitely a coach's decision. With the disappearing acts, though, not coming out for the third period. Matthews, how far I want to go down that path, probably not far because, hey, I don't know what he's feeling and I don't know what he's dealing with. But doctors making the decision, Keefe separating himself from it, wasn't his call. Maybe it wasn't Matt, whatever. That seems a little bit weird for me. Like, let's not have the doctors making calls. Like, if it's obvious, it's obvious. If not, maybe try to push through. But more than that, Samsonov, like, this is going to be the second time. Luke Fox writing in his story today at sportsnet.ca, like, they're not going to see him again unless there's a miracle. That'll be the second time in a row that Samsonov has just exited a series. And it's like, no, not coming back. And yeah, maybe hurt last year. We don't know the extent of it. We don't know what happened. This was just performance, I guess. And it's like, no, he's done for the series. There's just like finality to a moment with Samsonov in back-to-back series where it's not going well. That just feels like, okay, can you rely on this guy? I think they'll probably answer that question when they do, or whether they sign him to a contract or even offer him a contract this year. Just like, show up in every sense, whoever you are. It has to happen.
Yeah, there's a lot of uncertainties for tomorrow night. Matthews being one of them, wasn't out on the ice today. Samsonov, we're not sure. Looks like it'll be Joseph Woll. I think putting Woll in that opportunity for him, he's a young guy. Those are big experience learning moments. I felt like it was a good cushion to have, and now you're using it. Like, right away, you're using it. And the Bruins, obviously, they know what it feels like to beat the Maple Leafs. They know what it feels like to inflict more pain into this fan base, and they are not going to let that one slip away from them at home. Like, they're going to want to end this thing at TD Garden, not come back up to Toronto. But they have also their own playoff demons. Last year, reverse swept by the Panthers. Like, that stuff.
Which doesn't exactly help the Maple Leafs.
No, it doesn't. They have that extra
a little urgency
10%
in game five.
Of urgency to not let this even start to trickle in their
mind.
And
that 10% would have been enough in a game five against Florida that was pretty well dominated by them last year.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. Tonight, we've got, as we mentioned, an elimination moment, possibly for Tampa Bay at Florida. That's 7 p.m. Game 5 there on Sportsnet, followed by Vegas and Dallas at 9:30. If you're looking for the Blue Jays, we'll chat a little bit on them later in the show. They'll be up 7 o'clock against Kansas City on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So we'll get into all of that and more. And then Frank Saravalli will join us at 6:30 from Vancouver to talk about that Vancouver Canucks and Predators series. But let's bring in Ray Ferrar, NHL analyst for ESPN and Sportsnet. Ray, thanks for jumping on. How's it going?
I'm doing good. Long travel day. Just got to Boston, and you know, Vancouver is not very close to Boston.
No.
So luggage made it, so all good.
We were chatting with Jody Shelley. I mean, like, the ESPN guys are putting in the mileage this playoffs for sure. Okay, so Ray, there's degrees of rot, right? Like, you can eat an apple up to a certain point. But with this Maple Leafs team, like, if it's not rotten, it's rotting. Has it reached a level, though, for you where it's like obvious now, hits you over the head? If they don't have a miracle here, that something's got to change.
Well, I thought something was going to change last year when you know, like it just felt like the time was ripe. Even though they won a round, it felt like, geez, you know what? I kind of felt the same as I did 2 years before. It just doesn't seem like the mix is right. Like that, and I mean, I know we're all talking about the same thing. Like there's way too much money invested up front, not near enough money invested on the back end or in goal. Decisions were made that, you know, like I think people have to realize once a decision is made on a significant contract, you can't just change course. It's like changing an oil tanker's course. It takes forever. It takes a long time. And so while in theory it's great, you have all these high-priced forwards, at the end of the day, if before you couldn't defend well enough or now you can't move the puck well enough, like there's always a leak somewhere and it takes away from what you imagine the team to be. And that's what I see with the Leafs. It's like mismatched socks. Like it just doesn't match. It doesn't work. And if it does work, it works for a short period of time. It doesn't, you know, you don't see game over game over game consistency. And let's face it, like if you're watching the playoffs, not just the Toronto series, but every series is like, it is murder to play. Like it is so hard. And you have to, if you don't think things would change or should change, then that means you think that this group can turn into that by 7 o'clock tomorrow and be able to run that through this series. And they could. I mean, they could. It's not like Boston blows them out of the water, but that's a style of play to play consistently that just doesn't seem to be in their DNA.
Justin and I were talking about the little viral clip that went by of the bench and the frustration shown by some of the core four. I wonder for you, as someone that's been between the benches and on them, if that's a good sign, if that's a good sign of frustration and holding people accountable, or is that a sign of, as Justin says, a rot or something that really has infiltrated this locker room that you can't get past?
Well, it's funny. When I saw that, I kind of giggled, to tell you the truth, because one of the best line mates I ever had, and it won't be a big name, but it was our captain and with the Islanders, Pat Flatley. And Flats and I have very, very spirited personalities. And this would happen more often than you would think. Now, some guys don't say much on the bench. Other people do. And he would yell at me to get, you know, like I always felt like I had to help him. Like, you know, like he's working a puck, he's scrumming a puck. There's two guys on him. I'd go help. He'd lose his mind because he'd say, I'm going to get it. Now you're standing beside me. What am I going to do? And then I'd yell at him for, I don't know, throwing a lousy pass over. And so all this stuff would happen. And oftentimes our winger, Benoit Hogue, would go, would you guys just shut up? Like, no more, right? He was tired of listening to it. And so that's what it sounded like or looked like to me. Like, they were heated, right? They're hot. Mm. And when, I mean, the part that looks a little over the top is when Marner throws his gloves down because it looks petulant, right? You're like, oh, come on. It's not that big a deal. It's just, let's get back to work. Like, there's all kinds of ways to show and vent your frustration. And sometimes it's, you know, you don't like to sit there and talk about it and, you know, hey, what could we do? And sometimes you just have to say, let's wake the F up here. Let's get going. Right. And that's where, look, the Leaf fans are frustrated. You don't think these guys are too? Like, this has been year after year that they just cannot quite get it right. And you can see why they would be really frustrated with it. And that's what happens. It just bubbles over. And you're like, and then honestly, though, like it bubbles over. Now that has to be the end of it. Mm. Now you go and you get to the next spot. You get to the next game. You get to the next play. Like, okay, good. You all yelled at each other. Fine. Done. Move on.
Another team we've seen yell at each other a little bit this year has been the Edmonton Oilers, or at least some members of the Edmonton Oilers. They look like they're rolling up 3-1 over the Kings. At the moment, they win a game that would be more suited, I guess, for LA last night, but they've won a couple of Oiler games as well. I wonder when you look at that team, because, yeah, they have maybe some deficiencies or some things that would make you think twice. But that power play, Ray, it feels like a major, major differentiator in this tournament. Is that like the peak of what we've seen in terms of power plays in recent history? And do you think that's something that actually could be the you know, break the tie if, say, they meet the Vegas Golden Knights or Carolina in a final or what have you? Like, that power play can be enough to lift Edmonton to new heights.
Well, it's a difference maker for sure, because the simple fact is you can scheme and you can draw up where their most dangerous spots are, you know, Hyman in front of the net, the Bouchard slapper off the one-timer, the Dreisaitl, you know, can shoot up and down that left side, you know, to even really extreme angles. You can scheme for all of that stuff. The problem is you can never pinpoint what McDavid's going to do and where he's going to be and where he's going to go. Like the play he made last night, LA for a decent amount of that play was in the right spot. And then he just kept going across and buying time and buying space. And of course, everybody's terrified when he's got the puck, and they just open up a little bit and go boom, boom, Dreisaitl, Bouchard, nets in the net. I would say this though, you can go through any team of the 15 that are left, and you can find the soft underbelly of every team. In most cases, that's what the salary cap does. It means that you're going to have strengths and weaknesses, and can you play past your weaknesses to get yourself into a position to win? I happen to think the Oilers are really good. I think Stuart Skinner is a playoff quality goaltender. I don't think he's the best goalie in the playoffs, but I do think he has had enough experience to grow on a talented base. I think he's really good. Now, injuries will do things, and you know, but by the time, if they're in this thing in 5 weeks, it'll probably look a lot different than it does right now. But I think the one thing that the Oilers have really grown at is they can win and are comfortable winning 2-1 every bit as much as the more fun way of winning, you know, 6-2, which, you know, when they get rolling, man, that's tough to stop.
Yeah, a team that already looks a little bit different a couple games in is Vancouver, and you've watched them all year. You just saw them. They're down to a third goaltender, and they still find a way to push back to not have that be an excuse and show that that's kind of their championship DNA or their culture that they've cultivated this year. Were you surprised at all to see the way that Vancouver is just continuously pushing out great performances regardless of whoever has to start a net for them?
Well, I thought yesterday was a Houdini. I mean, like that just doesn't happen. It's 3-1. I'm watching my son's soccer game at this point, and I've kind of turned the game. I was kind of watching both at the same time. I'm like, nah, to heck with this. I never get to see him play. I'll just turn it off. I get a text from my other son, and he's like, it's 3-2. I go, oh, how much is left? And he said, like, 2.5. So I was like, oh, I better turn this back on. So I turned it back on, and like I couldn't believe it. I mean, they were completely outplayed for most of that game. Shelos did a terrific job. Like, just think, the guy's played 9 NHL games. And, oh, by the way, here we are. Here's a playoff start for you in a really tough place to play against a really fast, really aggressive team. And he gave them everything they could have possibly hoped for. That's such a weird series, though. Like, you know, Nashville won a game where they never touched the puck in the third period. They literally didn't touch the puck unless they were blocking a shot, and they won that game. And then Vancouver won, and they didn't touch the puck. And so it must be confounding for, you know, for Nashville. They're like, you know, like, what more do we have to do? The two games we played best, we lost. And now they got to go, you know, the season's on the line tomorrow in Van, and, you know, they've got to try and muster up one more. For Vancouver, though, like, you know, I think their key is somehow, some way, Pettersson's got to unlock his game a little bit. He's thinking and picking his way around the ice. You know, he looks really unsure of himself. He's a hell of a player. And, you know, Vancouver's up 3-1 in the series, and they really haven't had much from him at all.
Last one for you, Ray. There have been some sliding doors moments, of course, already in these playoffs. Even off the ice, Matthews eating a bad piece of sushi might be one as well. But at least on the ice, I think Wyatt Johnston's overtime goal bringing Dallas back 2-1 in that series may be the biggest one, at least in terms of going towards the Stanley Cup. I mean, 3-0 and 2-1, completely different. But is that what lifts Dallas here? Is like that the thing they need to get back on track? Obviously, that's pretty easy to confirm that. But season saver, maybe the thing that actually changes who goes to a Stanley Cup final based in that moment?
Very, very well could be. You know, Dallas's great strength is they're incredibly well balanced. They had 8 guys over 20 goals this year. Wyatt Johnston is like the most, if you look at him walking into the rink, or if you see him like in his undergear, like, you know, his shorts and t-shirt, you'd be like, he's not big, he's not muscular, he doesn't look powerful. He has got a Patrice Bergeron brain. And I remember when he made the team last year, you know, he hadn't played much in his draft year because of the pandemic, but Dallas had seen him pretty regularly the year before. And so they still took him in the first round, even though, like, you know, I want to say he had played like 7 games in his draft year. It was like a weird circumstance. So he gets to training camp, and Pete DeBoer is like, oh, my God, this guy's really good. And he had a line, I'll never forget it. He said every time Jim Neal came around to talk, he was trying to hide Johnston just in case he wanted to send him back to junior. He was like, oh, my, like, this guy's got to stay. And he's a terrific player. That series is, those are 2 heavyweights in that series. And I guess that's the real test of the first round is, like, can you just claw your way through so you can, you don't exhale, but just kind of like, okay, we're through here. Now we can just play. Because look at last year, Boston has 132 points 10 days later. Thanks for coming. Nice season. See you later. Mm-hmm. And that's one, it's not even out of the first round. Like, what a kick in the pants that is. And man, this round is murder. And if you can just find your way out of it, and I guess that's what Toronto goes, if we could just win game 5, just one game, and then don't worry about anything else. Like, if you look at winning 3 games, it's too much. Just look at winning the first period of tomorrow. I mean, they've been behind almost every game in the first period. Like, just play there and then move, you know, just inch your way. Maybe you can work your way back into it. It's a long road, though, when you're down 1-3.
Oh, yeah. Looks like a mountain ahead of them. But, yeah, I like it. One step at a time. Tonight, Vegas and Dallas will have that game 4. It'll be a fun one. Ray, we appreciate you taking the time today. Glad to have you on the show, and hopefully we get to do it again soon.
You betcha. You guys have a great night. Thanks.
Thanks so much. Ray Ferraro, NHL analyst, ESPN and Sportsnet. Of course, looks like he's going to be at Leafs in Boston tomorrow, and that is going to be a big one. 1 year ago, Justin.
What happened 1 year ago?
Finally caught lightning in a bottle.
Mm.
Feel like this fan base is feeling a little bit differently 1 year removed from finally that OT winner that John Tavares scored on April 29th, 2023. And here we are feeling like this could be the end of the core 4. It's crazy. 365 days, 1 year ago.
Yeah.
It was pure jubilation. They made it through the first round. It felt invincible. And look where we're at.
That moment certainly hasn't brought the riches that we expected. What, 2 wins and it would be 7 losses since.
Yeah.
2-7.
Hasn't been great. Great to talk to Ray Ferraro, though. We'll take a quick break. We're going to get to Frank Saravelli on the other side, who's joining us from Vancouver. That Vancouver win last night, Houdini, however you put it, they're up 3-1 in the series. And we'll talk a little bit around the rest of the NHL and the Blue Jays tonight in action. That's all next on the Fan Pregame.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, Welcome back to the Fan Pregame Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Ailish and Justin. Let's not keep Frank Scaravelli waiting any longer. President of Hockey Content at DailyFaceoff.com. Frank, where are you joining us from today?
Back in Vancouver. I was in Nashville yesterday for that insane Game 4 and now made it back across the continent in this crazy travel series.
Back in the stall, ready to give us takes tonight in your little studio. I love it. All right, let's talk about that Vancouver Canucks win last night. I'm saying that the fortitude the Vancouver Canucks showed, whether it was, you know, miraculous or not, playing with a third-string goaltender ripping off wins, hey, that's doing stuff without making excuses. That's championship culture. Is that instilled by a coach, by a leadership team? How do you think the Vancouver Canucks are finding a way?
I think it's probably all the above. It started with Rick Tocchet, and you can tell that there is no excuses here for players that have injuries, and there's probably a few of them that are playing that are, you know, trying to battle through those. There's something about this team that, you know, even you look at Game 1 and their come from behind victory. What I liked most about that wasn't really the way that they've played. In fact, watching the games, this has probably been some of the most boring, low event playoff hockey ever that I can remember covering in terms of the playoffs. But they didn't panic. They've, you know, certainly been in spots where they could have and should have, and they didn't buckle. And so that's been through the totality of the four games. And I think the scary part for the Nashville Predators now, as they come out west to Vancouver with their season on the ropes, is the Canucks really haven't played a good game yet. And at some point you would think Elias Pettersson's going to get off the mat. At some point, something's going to happen with one of their other lines this series. They're going to get a big goal from a defenseman. Their goalie's going to stand on his head. They haven't really had any of that success so far this playoff, and yet they still lead the series 3-1.
On a scale from zero to maybe Mitch Marner, what is the frustration level regarding Pettersson?
It's certainly a few notches below Mitch Marner, because there just isn't the same history, right? There's not the same baggage that came into this playoff run with. I think there's probably been some frustration in this Vancouver market dating back to the All-Star game, and probably some of that's fair, but I can't put my finger when watching Pettersson what exactly is the issue. It seems like he's perhaps mentally not engaged or there. And I thought, interestingly enough, after getting jacked up by Jeremy Lazan during the Preds celebration on that goal, the shifts that followed after that were his best of the series. The problem is he got to the third period again in Game 4 and was on a milk carton. So will Elias Pettersson wake up? That's scary for everyone else.
I know the Vancouver Canucks are kind of banged up, dealing with some issues. Obviously, Demko, DeSmith. I wonder the latest you have on that. And maybe even Quinn Hughes. I know you were writing about Quinn Hughes maybe looking like he had been weathered a bit throughout this series. So your latest on the injuries that the Vancouver Canucks might be facing.
Yeah, they've been piling up for a team that, amazingly enough, was really pretty healthy for the bulk of the season. Quinn Hughes certainly looks like he's laboring through something. The eye test would tell you that. He's had an uncharacteristic series when it comes to his impact. We're used to him having the puck all the time and dominating and driving play. That really hasn't been the case. And to be fair, that hasn't been the case for the entire Canucks team. 13 shots through two periods in Game 4, 12 shots total in Game 3. So the eye test would tell you that. His deployment, a minute and a half below his season average. The data would begin to tell you that something just kind of isn't quite right. And then when it comes to the goaltending, Rick Tocchet has a decision to make. Casey DeSmith is certainly an option and could be the guy in Game 5 for the Canucks to close out this series. But Artur Shilov's played so well in game four and looked every bit as confident that the Canucks have some house money to potentially play with. You can always go back to DeSmith if you need to, but unless you are 1,000% sure that he's 100% healthy, might make sense to stick with Shilov's.
We're chatting with Frank Saravalli of Daily Faceoff. I think the biggest way we were wrong, or at least I was wrong, heading into these playoffs was my thought process regarding the Colorado Avalanche, who look like, I don't know, pretty close to what it looked like 2 years ago when they were overwhelming teams with talent and Cale Makar looked like the best defenseman in the world. And you go down the list of talented players on that roster. For me, the performance has been surprising. I'm not really sure why it's been surprising, but it has been surprising for me. I'm not sure where you started with them, Frank, but have you encountered any surprise watching them cook the Jets for the last three games?
Not really a surprise, because they're a really good team that just happened to play some really mediocre hockey the last 2 weeks of the season. They lost home ice advantage in the series, and I thought stylistically heading in the way that Winnipeg dominated the season series, that might be an indicator of what was to come. I thought that it might be a battle of wills, and it seems like in some ways the battle of will exists kind of going back and forth potentially maybe between coach and players in Winnipeg, and not necessarily in the two stylistic differences. Hellebuck obviously hasn't been himself. This team has not defended well in front of him either. And certainly all of that, I'm surprised it just hasn't been more competitive. If you had told me heading into the series that the Avs are going to win, I'd be like, yeah, okay, sure. Mm-hmm. But if you had told me that they're going to win in five games and the Jets are going to go out with a whimper, that part would have surprised me. And obviously that's not written in stone, but it certainly feels like it's trending that way. And if you felt like, Justin, you were embarrassed with your Colorado pick or maybe surprised, I would say hold my beer, because I think I was on this show 10 days ago saying that the Boston Bruins are ripe for the picking.
Okay, yes. Yeah, so
I believe that was the exact quote that was circulated.
They may still be ripe for the picking. It's just, is there a team capable of doing it in front of them right now?
I don't think so.
Well, yeah, I would say they may be ripe for the picking, just not by this team.
Yeah.
Okay, so Maple Leafs, Bruins, of course, we're talking to Frank Saravalli of DailyFaceoff.com. Let's say that the series ends.
There will be no picking.
With the Maple Leafs not picking on the Boston Bruins, but losing, whether it's next game or in the next two. What do you think is a certainty this offseason that the Maple Leafs will do to make this a different experience, a different team to watch, to cheer for, to play for come next season?
Well, I think there's going to be significant change. I think it would be with at least one piece of the core. I think you're probably looking at a coaching change, very likely. And then how far does the change reach after that remains to be seen. You have a new president at MLSE. There's lots of question marks. To me, at least from a core perspective, the Toronto Maple Leafs have twisted themselves into a pretzel the last few off seasons, staring down this question of what do we do to make this different? Now this is, you know, year eight of the Austin Matthews playoff experience of that era, I should say. It's not him. And they have nothing to show for it. The answer or part of the issue that they worked themselves into was, well, we don't want to make a trade because then we might make our team worse in the process. It was almost like there was a fear of what if we make the wrong move? What if we lose the trade? What will the PR look like? To me, I think right now it becomes extremely simple to boil down to. You heard Brendan Shanahan a few years ago use the term killers. We need killers, guys with killer instinct. And the Leafs not only don't have that, and I think you could even make it more simple than that. Does Mitch Marner help you win? That's the only question you need to ask yourself. Does player X help you win? And if the answer to that is I'm not sure or no, then I think we've seen enough evidence and sample size now to be able to answer that question.
Yeah, like it's easy to pick the name, and just like how difficult is it going to be to put in practice, because they're kind of all balls and chains, right? Like no movement, like it almost seems impossible. Like, do you see an easy route to getting around this, or is this going to be difficult to try and pull off, even if you are as ambitious as you want to be?
I don't view that as being a roadblock. And if you're talking about trade clauses and things like that, look, Mitch Marner has taken enough abuse the last 72 hours that I don't think it's going to be that difficult. And I think at some point there's probably someone that has to raise their hand and say, for the good of this team, something needs to be different. And he needs a new contract. And it could be as simple as, hey, appreciate everything you've done here, but we'd like to go in a different direction. And oh, by the way, we're not re-signing you. Once you have that discussion and the Band-Aid's ripped off anyway, what's the difference where you play the last year of your deal? You have a measure of control in terms of being able to pick your destination, almost like being a free agent, and that you could block anything. But I don't see that realistically this summer, if it were to come to that, that someone absolutely gets in the way and prevents something from happening, because the first sign that any player gets a hint that they're not wanted there anymore, it's typically not an issue at all.
I'm going to give you 45 seconds to tell us how Utah was in your first experience of the Utah Hockey Club that is coming quickly.
Absolutely loved it. Was blown away by the support line wrapped around the building to get in. Cool. They had to turn away people. That place was loud. It echoed. And there was this unique feeling of, you know, a feeling out process. They want to know what these guys are all about. And the players wanted to see what this place looked like with their own eyes. And they wanted to hear that they would be going to a passionate NHL market. It's not going to be much different than Seattle or Vegas in terms of the fan support right from puck drop. And I have zero doubt that it's going to be an absolute smashing success. And I think the league has done something really smart after all this time to take the weakest link in the league and now make it an absolute strength.
Wow, that's a great vote of confidence and support. I'm glad to hear it. It looked beautiful. So a little jealous, got to do that. Well, enjoy your travels, Frank. We'll definitely have you on soon, and maybe we'll have half the teams left to talk about at this point. Thanks, Frank.
See you guys.
Appreciate it. Frank Saravelli, dailyfaceoff.com. Okay, so we got a couple minutes here to quickly go through what's on the network tonight and what our best bets are. So I'll go to Jays in Kansas City. I mean, it was a bit of a tough weekend. We can kind of put that on repeat. But the Blue Jays struggling to score runs. They're playing Kansas City, who they just saw like 2 minutes ago. So I'm going to do something that's been hitting mostly for Blue Jays and Blue Jays unders. So under 6.5 in tonight's
game. Ooh, it's dropping, eh? Those lines, 6.5?
Yeah, it used to be 8.5, but you know what? If it's kind of a happiness hedge too. If they score runs, you'll be happy, but you won't be making money. And if they don't score runs, you make money. So under 6.5 will be my best bet tonight. And there is also Danny Jansen's bundle giveaway tonight. So you get a jersey and glasses, his Danny Jansen glasses. So I have him as a home run as well, plus 390.
Okay. Yariel Rodriguez, Jonathan Bolin on
not a very deep history.
Yeah,
so we'll see. They're either going to blow him up or he's going to throw a no-hitter.
6.5 for guys who not much of a track record, but that is the case of the Toronto Blue Jays at this moment. I'm going to tonight's game on Sportsnet, at least the second game. Vegas and Dallas. Vegas at home, plus money. Whew. I mean, the better team throughout this series. They could easily be up 3-0. Vegas at home, plus money. Vegas plus 105. I think that's the route I'm going tonight. Might be a little happiness hedge in there as well. And OKC is going to try to close out tonight. Minus 4.5 favorites against the Pelicans. They've just fed the Pelicans their lunch this entire series. I like them to do it again. 4.5, the Thunder.
Okay, so that Kansas City Blue Jays game is up on Sportsnet 1. It's also going to be on Sportsnet 590, the Fan. Tampa and Florida. Tampa, do you think they starve off elimination?
No, they're going to be starving
after tonight.
They're
going to be starving
for
tonight.
Victories. Yeah. Florida gets through
You think Florida does? Yeah, so Florida 7 p.m., game 5 there. Game 4, Vegas and Dallas at 9:30. That one's across Sportsnet. I don't know. I kind of feel, as I said earlier in the show, my most confident potential return to relevancy this series was the Lightning at least able to push it to 7.
Yeah, I guess you'd be speaking out of both sides of your mouth.
So
but maybe
I'm
that says
in
something
them.
About the teams that are down 3-1 that even we don't have that much faith in them getting one victory. Very quickly, we tease the Kelseys.
Mm-hmm.
One Kelsey goes to ESPN. One Kelsey signs an extension, becomes the richest tight end in football. I mean, I think it's a lock.
Pretty good.
Jason Kelce, it's going to be a good thing. He's great. Mm-hmm. Travis Kelce, though, was there not some signs of diminished
He'll be
returns?
38 when this new deal is
38-year-old tight end? Whew. Richest in the league? They'll be fine.
They'll be happy. They'll have podcasts, and they'll probably win another championship.
Yeah.
It's the way it is for the Kelces. And Taylor Swift putting out albums every day. Pretty wealthy couple. All right, folks, that's it for us on the Fan Pregame. We'll be back tomorrow. Leafs in Boston as well. It's going to be a big couple nights here on SportsCenter.